continual evidence that you lodged in paragraph 5.2, you said you referred to it here that there's no justification for the change in zoning. Isn't the zoning proposed exactly the same as in the operative plan?
It is. The zoning, a better word would be the density.
Was the density in the operative plan different?
Yep.
What's the density in the operative plan?
450. One per 450. And then the density in the proposed plan is one per 1500.
I thought they were both the same.
And the change in density was really the crux of the submission as to why that occurred on the basis of the Section 32 report. Was all about increasing densities.
So it's got its own subzone in the operative plan. The Queenstown Heights low density residential.
The overlay. Subzone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the overlay would seem to be without little reference in the district plan, other than when it comes to minimum lot size and density. There's no specific rule in the operative district plan that says if you're developing in the overlay area, you must provide geotechnical.
But in, hold on, I'm just reading the subdivision, chapter 15, and it's got low density residential, minimum lot area, Queenstown Heights area, 1500 square metres.
Yep.
So that's exactly
it's
the same.
It's the minimum lot size.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the minimum lot size is the same.
Yep, the minimum lot size is the same.
Right.
It's just the density, in that the density within the subzone is still the same as the low density residential area without the overlay being 1 per 450. And yet the proposed district plan shifts that to match the minimum lot size. And my original submission was interested as to why that was. And on that, I authored perhaps a better planning response was to have no minimum lot size and no minimum density, but to establish a cap over the site, which would say no more than a certain number of residential units, because it's expected that there will be areas within the site that we cannot build on, and areas that we can, without knowing where those are, that without the minimum lot size and minimum density, but cap would introduce some flexibility to enable a higher level of development within the areas that could be built on, whilst the remainder would effectively, can't build them. I must point out that the submission has been revised so that it is not seeking a density which is above the ODP density.
So now the ODP density just looking at that, was 650, wasn't it?
650.
Well, I'm just looking at rule 7652, it's a zone standard, site density. The minimum net area for any site or each residential unit shall be 650 square metres.
Right. That's an operative district plan.
Yeah, that's. And then it's got, if think it gets even more confusing. Because then it says for residential units to be erected on vacant shares, these simple site titles, in other words, there are existing cross leases. Well, that's, those are existing, they're not improved. So, but 650 would still be a minimum of two for 1500.
Is that proposed strictly or operative?
It's operative.
Operative.
Yeah.
It was my understanding that we've gone through 450, and that was based upon the resource consent. Or actually, it was based upon a paper that I produced for the landowner in terms of prospective purchases.
Mm.
So, sorry if I have got that wrong. We would only be seeking the density that would pertain to the operative district plan. If that was one per 650 square metres, then I would ask you to reinsert that as a calculation to the cap, which is sort of the primary.
I accept that it can be confusing because it's one of the most confusing district plans in the country, the operative plan. I may have even been looking at the wrong section knowing how this works.
Knowing that you
should
accept that you find the first
time as being
relevant.
Yeah. Since there could be 15 other rules that apply. Anyway, whatever it is,
that's what
you're seeking.
That's
the maintenance
of the status quo in terms of density.
Maintenance of status quo as the density. And then, with effectively no minimum site size.
Correct.
So that the sites can then match the geotechnical results.
That's right. On the premise that section 106, obviously to affect any subdivision, we will need to provide a detailed geotechnical assessment regardless of what's in the structure. That's right. Then we have had to do that for, if I could use the example, on Middleton Road, which is down the other end of the natural hazard or the landslide area. And we've had to meet the test under section 106 and that and provide a detailed geotechnical report, which Paul Frankner actually authored. Hence it's involved.
I have found the rule you're right at 450. That's what's confusing about
that.
You do with this plan, the operative plan.
The number of times I thought I had the rule set and made an application for council, absolutely perfect. Now we'll come back and make a note next year for 1 hour.
Try the new Christchurch district plan if you want to get totally lost. Well, it comes up quickly. Follow all those linkages and you're popping, and then you realise you're lost and you can't find your way back.
Yeah.
What is the cap that you want? Is that the 412? Lots that you get by dividing.
Correct. And in paragraphs, part three of my primary evidence is the rationale for arriving at that based upon the development of the property or the site at Middleton Road, which shares some comparative geography access and servicing requirements.
And now I have a question.
Yeah.
Gross area. Remove a certain proportion for access and roads, and an amount for the natural hazards areas, which, and I can't remember if there was a diagram of this to put, was something like 56% of the site is not natural hazard? Well, anyway, roughly,
yep.
say up and up.
Yep.
So should that cap be determined by the gross area or by, say, at least the area net of the natural hazards? See what I'm
saying? Yes, I would say gross in terms of the calculations to take out the 56 or the for the geotech bruises. Yes.
So you would stick with the growth area as the basis for determining the cap?
Yep.
And then
I'd start the gross and work back or apply assumptions you might have in terms of what needs to be taken off for the natural hazard / gradient, mm-hmm. and then the roads and the rest to arrive at a net.
Well, yes, but that would be if the rule and the plan is something set cap,
yep.
then all of that would unfold during the course of the development.
Yep.
So yeah, so then there would be the question of some potential 412 units
sure.
distributed over the site in some way yet to be decided. So the next question is, does everything else line up, like infrastructure and so on?
Yeah, I guess the approach I've taken is a practical approach by applying those, rather than my very first primary submission took the theoretical approach of taking the site area divided by 450, and it would seem more logical, or if we were to arrive at a cap which we could reasonably expect would be the yield from the site, then you would have to take the practical approach. So that's what I've done. So yes, in a roundabout way, you could be selling yourself short. But I think that's the only practical, or in my mind, the logical approach to arrive at the cap rather than taking the theory of court, which would seemingly not take into account anything from the natural hazard.
So one thing that keeps occurring to me, and that is, you seem to be basing everything you say on the assumption that this would be a single stage subdivision by one developer.
Correct.
But if it wasn't, if it was either staged or if it was split up into sort of some bigger blocks and partly on solid, then this approach is going to put some problems, isn't it? Because unless you've done the geotech stuff first, and
you'd need to do the geotech to create a subdivision to sell.
Yes, but you could. But you
unless
could
you're selling hot salt.
But if you were splitting it up into, I don't know, say three or four, for ongoing further development
yep.
by individuals, then how would you allocate that density?
Yeah, sure. I wouldn't expect council to issue a subdivision consent without knowing that each site could be built upon.
I know that.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
That's not
I might be misunderstanding.
The question is,
yep.
how would... Because you couldn't... With
the
stage approach, you wouldn't know at that stage the capacity of... You wouldn't be able to distribute that 412, except on an area basis, and some of the lots might be better than others.
Yep, I guess the only offering I would have for that would be that there would have to be a stakeholder with them as a private agreement,
mm.
sale of that.
Yeah.
And I guess the influence on that would have to be driven by the purchaser.
Yeah.
And knowing what you're actually buying,
it's not,
whether,
it's not really
whether it will be worth it as to how many units you would get.
Because
so,
it's not really our concern, is it?
No, but I wouldn't think, mm. just in the general sense, that somebody would buy it without
having
a full understanding.
I'm just trying to think it through.
Yeah, right. Yep. Sorry, sir, I didn't mean to offend you.
Something, yeah, another issue that I haven't talked at all about, well, you mentioned it in there, is
yeah.
the traffic thing, which right, was you discussed in your original submission in the Section 42A report.
Mm.
And all you can really say is that it's subject to negotiation with the NZTA about upgrading it.
Yeah,
another section.
I guess it's one which was almost sort of extending to the wall around that side of things in a way, and then to develop the site put a resource consent in next week, we would be afforded a density or a number of units on site, and then a consideration of that would have to be the access to it. And I think it would be an interesting one to have a conversation with PRC as to what they would expect or what they would facilitate by consent as a controlled activity on the road.
So they can control, even though, even as a controlled activity.
Yes. But controlled activity, one of the criteria of control is the traffic, correct?
So it can't be declined, but it, it could be conditioned.
I guess my primary evidence student always a little carefully because I'm mindful of the increased intensity or density that they want to arrive at in some low density residential areas. But for the purposes of this subject site, the entitlement is in the plan at a density of 1 per 450, and that might be whittled down by the natural hazards. But again, there would have to be some arrangement with QLC for an upgrade, I would imagine, to get there, if we wanted to make the improvement straightforward, or if we wanted to argue the point in that by approving the zone in the first place, they must provide the infrastructure to service it.
Within a way, when you mentioned, it might have been a bit opportunistic here, because using an overlay which is designed for natural hazard purposes to cut back the capacity for the traffic reasons.
Yeah, opportunistic. I think she's been generally raising some points about those intersections on all solutions. And I've summarised that in some of my comments for my dwelling capacity because I think it's important to understand exactly. And I don't want to digress back into something we've just left, but the NPS side of things as to what's serviced. If you are going and refusing applications to presumably increase density and low density residential areas on the basis that there's no adequate roading to service them.
I think the answer would really, because the assumption would be that this overlay was imposed because of natural hazard considerations, and if you could completely disprove it, that whole thing would fall away. But the obvious saying that the council still has the opportunity to control the access issues.
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand at all of your primary evidence.
Yeah.
Probably not the most important one. 7.8. You talk about secondary relief and tertiary relief. And you talk about in this circumstance, status quo must prevail. What is the status quo?
In compiling those three paragraphs, I guess I was accepting that if there was a level of geotechnical investigation that was required to try and get the density back to what the operative district plan is, then why was it not provided to get from the operative district plan to the proposed district plan?
Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand your point there, but we just... And I think I understand what the secondary relief in paragraph 7.7
is. Yep. The secondary relief, I would understand, might require more geotechnical.
Yes, and it would be required that
the secondary relief
is actually to identify the hazard and include it and let anything else off the hook. But, but then you go on about, if that can't be achieved, same from
I guess that can't be achieved.
But you last extend it. In this circumstance, the status quo must prevail. What is the status quo?
The ODP density of 1 per 450. I accept it's a rather circular sentence.
Yeah, I wish you could understand it. But thank you.
But I must say I was finding the process somewhat circular at that point in time.
Yeah.
Conventional subdivision being?
The discussion is about the yield of subdivision, lots and so on, but is this a site?
Away from residential.
Is this a site that's suitable for a hotel or whatever else is allowed for under low density?
Possibly.
You have local knowledge.
I'm basing that on, I guess, if we do have a pocket of good ground and we were able to suggest that the remaining ground, either affected by a new consent notice, is unsuitable for built development, so you would then have a large amount of landscaping to soften the appearance of such a large building high on the Queenstown Hill. There would be some certain boxes that would need to be ticked, so to speak, in terms of the visual side of things of what would be expected across the low-density residential area, that if you were providing a hotel, you would have to address, because you wouldn't fit either the permitted or the controlled statuses that would be in the zone.
Absolutely. And how would that, if we pursue that proposition, how does that then unfold in terms of the provision of infrastructure and the performance of the Goldfields Heights intersection?
I guess it enables, in resourcing, the ability to upgrade infrastructure. I keep in mind that the recent subdivision on Middleton Road has largely helped on some water supply issues, and the wastewater is usually not too much of a problem the higher you go. But again, on the traffic, I think if you did have a larger project, then there would be more resourcing. But again, I don't think you could say with any certainty in the consent process that you would be able to get that one out, so to speak.
Thinking about what else is possible.
Yeah. Possible would be debatable.
Thank you. That's Mr. Chair.
No questions?
Yeah. Apologies again, sir, for Mr. Faulkner. I know
that's okay.
That this submission is kind of plenty of geotechnical, but I can only ask if you.
Well, I think
in the specific questions.
I think in the other questions we're planning on geotech.
Yeah, I would agree.
My next question, obviously, though, is much more important.
Yeah.
You're representing Mr. McDonald.
Yes.
How about Remarkable Heights? Is that you too?
I am Remarkable Heights.
Yep. Do you all that now?
I am here in the capacity to. I've been asked to attend to answer questions for both, if it was assistance.
Right.
I do understand that both of those submissions have received favourable such for reporting from the QLEC officers involved, which is one thing, but certainly if you had questions on and above that, then I'm able to answer them. I'm here to assist on those and in no other capacity at all.
Yes, we'll just give us a few minutes
to
check.
What's the submission number?
409 and 347.
certainly give you some words that would help to introduce each.
This was the boundary adjustment one.
Remarkable
view. 409. 409 was the landscape.
Yes, 347 is the one up Milton, right?
Oh, yes.
And I do have, if it's helpful, some copies of the subdivision which has been approved up there, which denotes the existing property boundary and the existing zone boundary with a little more detail.
Yes, that was just a... But it was in that instance where the UGB and the zone boundaries don't align with the property boundaries.
That's right. And a consent is obviously, as we saw, currently being affected.
Yeah. Can you provide us with a copy of the subdivision?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's probably the most useful thing to know.
I must apologise, the colours are somewhat faint. I think you're right, but probably it should be clear. There is a larger scale subdivision plan which leaves a gap up the top, and the second sheet provides a more detailed representation of the subdivision as it applies up the top of the tankers.
Thank you.
as you'll see from looking at the first sheet, there's three areas of primary consideration. The first is where the rural general zone is denoted down the bottom right. Where the submission expects or seeks relief to extend the residential boundary out to the property boundary, which is currently rural general. The top one is the dashed line is denoted with the zone boundary, and that's the area actually where it's incredibly steep. So whilst the subdivision plan looks like a considerable area, when you're on site, you're quick to find that you could lob a rock from one side to the other with relative ease. And the third is on the northwest side where rural general zones are denoted, and the intention would be for the dash line to extend out to the property boundary and ready, once again extending the low density residential zone to the property boundary.
Do you want to try and copy?
I have emailed you to a copy already.